Hey everybody, welcome to a special episode of the OIG Roundtable. The table's not round. Matt Kachansky's here with me. It's just the two of us today. We gave Wade and Jason the day off. Matt and I are down here in the Baltimore area. We're attending the American Health Law Association conference. They're doing a subspecialty conference on essentially fraud and abuse. For the next couple of days, I was on a panel involving statistical sampling in the fraud, waste, abuse space. A lot of discussion involving the Medicare Program Integrity Manual, specifically Chapter 8, which talks about sampling and statistical sampling. So Matt and I have been spending the past couple of days there meeting with a bunch of law firms and just kind of expanding our reach on the advice side about what's out there in the fraud, waste, abuse, and compliance space. So, you know, we want to make this kind of quick, but, you know, one thing that we thought was interesting, and we didn't know this until we got here, was we walked in, and in the vendor area, as many of you know, you go to these conferences and there's vendors and tables and things of that sort. OIG had a table in the vendor area, Office Investigations, where Matt and I came from. And we thought that was kind of unique. Like, why is the OIG, particularly the Office of Investigations, why are they at a healthcare conference for lawyers? And so, you know, we went up to the two people that were at the table, people that Matt and I have known for a number of years, and sort of asked them about, like, why are they here? And it was a little amazing. They were there for outreach because it turns out that a lot of people don't know who the OIG is. And of course, everybody thinks that the OIG is the FBI, which is fine in the general sense, but it was really perplexing to be at a conference that was healthcare fraud, waste, abuse, compliance centric, the American Healthcare Law Association, and OIG had a table. I thought that was kind of an amazing thing. So, you know, so one of the reasons why I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about as at least an initial topic is, you know, Matt's been in this space about 35 years. He was in the OIG for about 10 years before I got there. And I think the issue has always been name recognition, and branding has always been an issue for the OIG. Right, Matt? I mean, right. This has been something like, you know, when you started in the late 80s, this was already, you know, kind of a problem. And to see this at a conference, it was just really a shocking thing to me.
Yeah, it's been an evolution to some degree of the exposure of the OIG. I mean, when I started, nobody knew who we were. When we would go out in the field and just try to introduce ourselves to our witnesses or the provider subjects, it would take a 10-minute speech to explain who we were. And still, it would come back, oh, the FBI visited me today. You know, so that's always happened. And then, you know, when we would do something, you know, there would be press releases and things. We never got a say in those things. It was always the FBI or the Department of Justice and other agencies. And that was the OIG and the other agencies that helped. They were never named. It was very anonymous. But as, you know, as they got more sophisticated, as they grew, as healthcare became more of a priority with the Department of Justice, there was more and more, but still it was always kind of second fiddle. It took a long time for us to even have our SACs in the field be able to provide statements to the press and things like that. It always, before that, had to come through the IG, him or herself, and that kind of slowed it. But to hear that it was, you know, still to the point where they have to have a booth in a you know, healthcare law forum is surprising.
It was mind-boggling. And in the course of that conversation, the person that was running the booth happens to be someone I went to the academy with. I've known for 25 or 26 years, you know, been friends with them for a long time. And I was pretty perplexed. And I said, well, how often are you doing this? And the response was, every conference that we can possibly go to, we're providing a booth for outreach and for conversation and things of that sort. And I thought it was really an amazing thing. And I know here at the conference, one of the topics that was brought up was one of the sessions was on healthcare fraud and sort of an anatomy of healthcare fraud investigations. And I thought, oh, you know, we do this constantly. I do presentations for organizations incessantly on the life cycle of an OIG investigation. And we do entire blocks of training on how the OIG does its investigations, not giving away secret sauce, but just what's the life cycle of an OIG investigation, the different subpoenas that are out there and the types of subpoenas that exist. And I just find that we spend so much of our day trying to educate providers on the OIG. And most recently, I was telling Matt this story. I recently had a conversation with someone who was the chief operating officer of a large practice. And I was referencing my time at the OIG. And I kept saying, well, when I was at the OIG, when I was at the OIG. And the conversation continued after I left. And I learned that the person asked other people in the meeting after I left, hey, Eric kept referencing the OIG. What's the OIG? And I just, it was mind-boggling to me. And I mean, I just don't understand, like, the OIG does the best job that it possibly can to market itself and promote itself, but it just seems like there is this general lack of understanding as to really what the thrust of the OIG is and what they do.
Yeah, and when I moved from the IG community into my role in, at the UPIC, it was amazing to me that, you know, this group of investigators, who's one of their main priorities is to refer cases to the OIG, had really no idea what the OIG did with them once they were received. You know, they didn't understand the investigative process that the OIG follows, what kind of evidence they needed to facilitate that process, and then simply in the criminal litigative process, they didn't understand the difference between an indictment, an information, a plea agreement, a conviction, or sentencing. They all just kind of lumped it in. There was no real understanding. It's sort of like the OIG was the, you know, the mythical end product, and then they would just, you know, we sent it there, it's gone, and they didn't try and follow it after that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for people that are watching this podcast, and we're not really talking about, you know, a lot of things that we're talking about, but, you know, we love doing these presentations for different organizations. I love going and talking about what I did as an OIG agent, what we did as OIG agents, what the life cycle of an OIG investigation looks like criminally, civilly, administratively. I talk all the time about the fact that the OIG just isn't the work plan. The badges and guns are an important piece of that metric. When, you know, OIG agents show up on a search warrant or an arrest and people are all worried, these guys came and they had badges and guns. Yes, that's part of it. And we do a lot of trying to outreach to educate providers on the fact that it's a real piece of the metric of fraud, waste, abuse, and compliance. You know, we do a lot of education and training on the fact that there were probably about a half a dozen different types of subpoenas, administrative, criminal, and civil. And you've got to understand what those things are. But what really got to me was when we're at this health law conference of a bunch of lawyers who are healthcare-centric in fraud, waste, abuse, compliance, regulatory, and there is a block of instruction on healthcare fraud investigations. And it's like, you know, where is that disconnect? And it's really perplexing that there really is this disconnect in the community that becomes the result of, you know, these conferences. You see that these disconnects really exist. I don't even know how we get around. I don't know how you even make that connection. I know we spend a ton of time talking to providers about, like, for example, the creation of compliance plans. And we say, hey, when you create your compliance plan, by the way, are you following the OIG 7-point model compliance guidance? And people, like, look at you like you've got two heads. And they wonder, well, the OIG has compliance guidance out there? And yeah, there's a ton of stuff that's out there. It was good to see at this conference that there was this push to educate and train people and what have you. But, you know, you've seen this for 35 plus years. And, you know, I often wonder, did you ever really see a shift in that mentality from 35 years ago to today?
Not really. No, I mean, it's always been just the unknown, the great unknown is, you know, what is, if they knew what the OIG was, they still didn't understand what we did, why we did it, or how we did it. And
right.
It was just,
it's everything perplexing.
When it was, you know, when they received a subpoena or they received, you know, a visit from an OIG agent for an interview, they had no understanding of what we did and who we were. And it was always perplexing to me. And it's, I think to this day, I still think that exists, even though you see them on, you know, there's news, you know, NBC Nightly News has specials on the OIG
all the time.
And on those things, but it just doesn't click.
Yeah. I would always tell people, it's like I worked for the FBI, but better. I would always say I worked for the, I just always said that. But look, I think, look, a couple of things. For those of you that are watching our podcast, most of you know who the OIG is. I do recommend, however, that a great thing to watch, CNBC a bunch of years ago, did an hour-long show called The Healthcare Hustle. It focused on the strike force in New York, and it focused on cases in Puerto Rico. My old office out of New York was really the main focus of that one-hour-long special. You can get it online. It's free. You can watch it on YouTube and a few other sources. So if you really want to learn a little bit more about what the Office of Investigations out of HHS OIG does, it's a great show to watch. I was very fortunate to have been on some of the arrests and search warrants and some of the law enforcement things that were going on while that was being filmed. That was a great experience for me in my career. But I do think it's a great way for people to learn a little bit about what HHS OIG does. Alternatively, we here at Advise are happy to do education and training for different groups on the life cycle of an OIG investigation, subpoenas, and sort of the melding of law enforcement and healthcare fraud as a training for education and the like. For us on the Advise side, it helps with people understanding the importance of proactive compliance, right? I mean, we talk about this all the time. At the UPIC, you probably would not have met some of the providers that were billing the program if they had compliance in place that did what it should have done, right? I mean, it's such an – compliance is probably the most important piece of any fraud, waste, abuse-related matter that's out there.
Correct. Yeah, they had no guardrails, because of that, they stepped over the line into that sphere of attention that the UPIC gave.
Right. I mean, we talk all the time about the fact that if you're committing fraud, then these podcasts don't really matter to you. And if you're committing fraud, you don't care about the rules. You don't really care about Chapter 8 of the PIM. You don't care about Chapter 3, which is investigations, and the investigations part of the PIM. That's the geeking stuff that goes on when you love reading the PIM. But if you don't care about that, the fraud piece doesn't matter. But if you're someone who is looking to do the right thing, you know, that's where you have to be. And, you know, our October LinkedIn Live is going to be with our general counsel, Julie Janeway. And we're going to talk about the fact that compliance as a culture, it should exist. It's not an option in the healthcare fraud, waste, and abuse space. You know, and Matt, you'll tons of the stuff that you were doing at the UPIC and tons of the stuff that you're doing now really does fall on compliance failures from a provider who either didn't know or just put their head in the sand and just chose to have what they call in the civil world reckless disregard or willfully blind to the fact that, yeah, I think about it, but I didn't really budget for it and just kind of go about their day.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And, you know, we would go through the continuum of administrative remedies with these providers. You know, if they didn't know and it was a legitimate mistake, we would educate them. And hopefully they would set up a compliance program at that point. If they didn't, there is a check, you know, however many months later, if they're doing the same thing, that ratcheted up the administrative actions against them. So having that compliance program in place at some point during that process will save a lot of grief for any provider.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is that the train can go off the track, but it can easily be put back on the track, right? Remember, the whole point of the Medicare program is to pay claims in a manner that is commensurate with the rules and regulations. CMS wants to pay the money. The OIG wants to keep the money. And there's this push-pull that goes on between the OIG and CMS. But it all starts with having an appropriate compliance program in place. And as Julie is going to talk about when we speak on, I believe it's going to be October 18th, when we do our LinkedIn Live, Julie is going to tell you that compliance plans are living, breathing documents. They have to be updated. They have to be followed. And, you know, truly at the end of the day, an SIU or an OIG conducting an investigation has the absolute right to ask you, whether it be by subpoena or under contractual obligation to turn over documents, are going to ask you for things like your compliance plan, and not just for the compliance plan, but what have you done? Yeah. What did you do for the, did you have a compliance plan that said, well, we're going to do an audit of 5 records once a year, one record for each one of the 5 providers in our group? That is not a compliance plan. That's not even a veiled compliance plan or smoke and mirrors. So you got to think about these things. So it's good to be with Matt in person.
It is. It's nice. But I will say, you know, I'm sure people do know this, but there are OIGs for each of the branches, each of the agencies under the executive branch. I've finished my career at NASA OIG. If you want to watch a great movie about what an IG does, watch Love on the Moon. which was about the heist of the moon rocks from the Johnson Space Center that was investigated by the OIG. Great movie.
Oddly enough, when I came to your house, I did notice that there were three rocks in the front lawn. I did not turn green or glow, so I'm going to assume that they were just landscaping rocks, but we'll see. So thanks for tuning in. Kind of an abridged special edition, we'll call it, of this. I don't get to see Matt all that often, so we got an opportunity to spend a little bit of time together. You do. Well, you don't really hide that well. You're a big boy, so big boys don't hide that well. October, LinkedIn Live, Julie Janeway, compliance as a culture. We're going to have a great conversation about that. As always, we appreciate it. For those of you, again, that were at the AHLA conference that stopped me in the halls, I posted on LinkedIn earlier today. It was really amazing to have people coming up to us and saying, hey, I watch your podcast, I've seen your roundtable, your LinkedIn Live. It's super appreciated because we don't really see a lot of that part on the metrics. We do these, we don't really see it. So it was a super honor and it was very humbling for people to come up to us and just say, hey, you know, thanks for putting out that content. It was great stuff. So we do appreciate that.
And if you have ideas for other things you'd like us to talk about, send them in. We will certainly get them on the air.
Absolutely. It's an important part of keeping the conversation on fraud, waste, abuse, and compliance going. So again, if you're not getting the newsletter and you want to be part of the newsletter, shoot us an email at hello@advizehelp.com. We love to get that out to you. Our weekly podcast, you can always get through the newsletter. You can also get them through the YouTube channel. You just got to look for Advise Health on YouTube and Spotify. You can get that, listen to them on your drive to and from work. Or if you're having trouble sleeping, you can always listen to them that way.
So that's when Jason's on.
That's when Jason's on. That is true. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable next week.
Thank you all.